Welcome to yet another episode of my favorite podcast, that's Innovation Odyssey. Today I have with me, from my old town, that's Chicago, Olga Burdukovskaya, who is the CRO of Perforator.
First of all, thank you to having me here. Yeah, I'm also very happy to be here. I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. It's Monday morning, and I'm so happy you're spending the first few hours of your week with me. It means a lot because I get you fresh. I love that. So with most guests, I always let them do a 30-second pitch. Who are you and what do you do, Olga?
I'm CRO at Perforator. I'm also co-founder. Perforator is a platform for website load testing that detects performance problems before your real users do, if very short. So yeah, we created our platform to help businesses any size to detect their problems with their websites when their users on their websites. So yeah, this is where, this is who we are.
So when you say businesses, and you said businesses of all sizes, right? So anywhere from like a five, I'm just throwing numbers, but like a 5-person firm to like a 500-person firm?
We created our platform with a, you know, like purpose in our mind that would like to help to businesses any size. You have problems with growing, you have problems with your website, you can't spend a lot of money for your website optimization, that's fine. Our tool basically with a traditional approach would be very expensive and very time and expertise consuming. Our tool solve all these problems. You don't need to spend a lot of time. You don't need to spend a lot of money. You don't need dedicated people with a high level expertise in performance optimization of your website. So that's why, you know, we democratized the whole process for load testing.
I see. When it comes to websites, is it just e-commerce websites? Am I getting it wrong? Or is it just general websites?
We have clients from e-commerce, from e-learning. We have clients as a partners like IT consulting companies, digital marketing agencies who also has website development. Basically, it's any kind of web-based application, not only e-commerce. But if we're talking, when we're talking about e-commerce, yeah, for them especially, it's very important to have fast website with a, you know, with a great user experience. So their potential or their existing clients, they don't have any kind of problems with, yeah, with website, because their conversion rate would be very sensitive based on, you know, also based on these metrics like website metrics.
Can I go into a little bit on the nuts and bolts of your tool? I assume that it's AI?
No, we're not AI. You know, can you imagine these days?
You know, I am in the insurance industry. I've seen strange things. So I asked the question.
Oh, okay. It's not actually strange, you know. Why we don't use AI? Because we have the whole data from your browsers, from your, that's why, you know, we can't, let's say, use AI, because we don't want to provide information for our clients that actually not accurate. Because we have the whole data where your performance are, where your performance problems are, we would like to provide this data, not some kind of data that AI, you know, don't get me wrong, AI, perfect. We in a new step in our world, let's say so, and it's absolutely amazing what we have right now, how AI could optimize a lot of things. and help us be more productive. But when we're talking about performance problems on your website, you would like to have a great data where, why, when it happened, and under what conditions. And we already have all this data, so we don't need AI. And we don't want to put AI because we can put AI on our tool, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more curious from the perspective of like, well, I'm a slight cynic when it comes to actually using AI, just because you know that the underlying data has to be both strong enough to support AI in any form, and also the business should need it, right? Why shove a buzzword on a business if they don't need it? So I'm always very curious to know what can be done without AI, because if you're doing it without AI, and at one point, if you can actually include AI, it's a great scaling mechanism. I mean, it's a good story, right? And so how long have you been in?
So we started our company, let's say in beginning of 2020, when the pandemic happened. It was, you know, good time for that, to start something. So yeah, we were building our core at first, and our core, it's very hard technology based, and it's really innovative. We built it from scratch. We had a team for this. It was idea of my co-founder, CTO. He created all this technology based on his experience in IT industry, in tech industry. He has like almost 20 years already. So he was working in a lot of project, from small one to enterprise level one. And yeah, it was like, this is what, you know, bothering him a lot. Why load testing, performance testing, stress testing, supposed to be so, first of all, expensive. Like I said, traditional approach is very expensive. Somebody from this industry will be listening to us, and they could say, oh, we have JMeter, it's a free tool. Yeah, it's an open source tool, it's free tool, but you need to spend time using this tool to do scripting, let's say so. And usually comparing with Perforator, of course I will tell, you know, numbers. You need to, we had an example. It's like real life example that the same project was estimated by another company, IT consulting company. They said for this project to do load testing, it would be necessary to have 2 engineers and 2 months of their work. So yeah, the tool is open source. It's free. But you need to pay salaries. And, you know, 2 months to engineers, it depends on the country. It's, yeah, it's a lot of money still. It's not like, yeah, not a lot of money. In the end of the day, our partners choose to use our platform. And the project was done during 2 weeks with 1 engineer. And we were working with him, and he was not assigned like full time on this project. He was like spending 50-50 on another project as well. So basically it's 1 week, 1 engineer. Yeah. So yeah, our tool, yeah, it cost money, not a lot. Like I said, we optimized the whole processes, and we would like to make affordable our tool to any kind of size of the business. So the numbers were, I can tell the numbers, they spent around, including salary, including another, expenses, $2,200 for this project with our tool, And the another company, we estimated two months, around 30,000. So yeah, it's a big difference. And especially for businesses who is growing, you know, who count their money, who would like to have quality, for whom it's very important to have fast delivery with a qualitative product. So yeah, that's why you know we're here, and that's why you know my co-founder wanted to be so. He created it. He wanted, you know, to provide businesses with opportunities to use good tool, stable, with affordable money.
Once you check the website for the metrics that matter, I'm going to guess it's speed.
Yeah, we capture the whole data from every browser's instance, because our approach is browser-based approach. Our clients, they write the scripts, how their user journeys looks like. And after that, we launched virtual machines in the cloud. In every virtual machine, we launch browsers, real browsers, non-headless. So in every this browser, we start doing these scripts. Yeah, it's not supposed to be one script. It could be like thousands of type of the scripts. It depends what kind of clients you have, what kind of user journey they have. Someone, you know, if we're talking about e-commerce, someone will start, you know, browsing your website from homepage. Someone would start, you know, from certain, let's say, red dress page. And yeah, so we created that realistic load, and during this test, we captured the whole data. So we have all metrics, and we have not only pre-aggregated metrics, we have the whole raw data. So it doesn't matter for us, you know, what you would like to check. We already have all this data. It's not only answering your question. It's not only page load time or DOM, or we also capture web core vitals, core web vitals of these metrics. I mean, we have more than 100,000 metrics. We have the whole data.
Okay. And you, I'm going to assume you played back to the client in the form of a dashboard or something that they
understand? We're a platform, we're SaaS, so okay. We have everything. We personally, we don't interact with our clients.
I see.
They're just using our platform. So yeah, they do the test, and after that, they could see in their accounts all data. Mm-hmm. And they can analyze, you know, and see this data, and they will have this data all the time.
Do you not think there is some more additional financial value to actually helping them make things better, in the sense of, like, you know, you give them certain metrics and you see there's room for improvement? Do you have like a team of consultants that you want to deploy helping them, or that's out of scope?
That's out of scope, but yeah, of course. I mean, we have partners. Who already using our platform. It's basically IT consulting companies, not only in Chicago, but not only in United States, but also in Europe, in South America, in India. So yeah, if you would like to have also bug fixing, let's say so. Yeah, you can do this. We have the list of our partners, and you can contact us, and we will provide. We can have, you know, we're still not enterprise, yeah. So we are trying to take care about every our clients. And if you need additional help, of course, we will provide you information with the people who can help you. But personally, our company, we are not doing bug fixing.
And what is the link of the name Perforator? To what you do?
Link? What do you mean?
Like
link?
The connection.
Oh, we're drilling your website until we will find the problems.
Okay, good. That makes sense. And you were saying that this is really comes out of years of experience of your co-founder's professional career, right? And maybe a little bit about you. I saw that on LinkedIn that you have like a economics, accounting, math background.
Yeah, my my main major, I have several degrees. So,
yes.
But my main major, it's math.
Okay.
I have the math degree. I always was in math. Yeah, it's kind of my passion. You know, yeah, I'm a bit in another space right now, but yeah, it was what, I really loved it. And my economic degree, I just decided because I learn math from statistic perspective, but mostly from economic perspective, mostly. Mm-hmm. And I decided that it would be pretty useful for me also understand from economic perspective, you know, accounting perspective, how the business looks like, so I can cover the whole space.
Yes.
And after that, I also, when I relocated to United States, I also got some courses in Urbana-Champaign University here in Chicago online. It was pandemic time. digital marketing degree. Not it's not a degree, digital marketing courses. So I have, I try to understand from different perspective how the companies is working and how we can optimize the processes and how we can sell our services as well.
What drew you to the U.S.? Why did you move from Belarus? I'm going to guess you're from Belarus because your degree is from Belarus.
Originally I'm from Belarus, like my husband as well. We lived in Ukraine too. And this is the country where I relocated from to United States. We relocated from from Ukraine to United States because of his job. So, yeah, but I was, let's say, I had another type of activity. I couldn't say it was a job, but so, yeah, long story short, I was a professional poker player.
Love it. Oh, so your math, really. Actually, I'm interested. In poker, what of your background do you use? Is it your math? Is your the sense for numbers, or is it the sense for people, like body language, reading, cues? What is it that you feel like you use the most?
There is no right answer, I would say so. It's a mix of math and psychology, of course, and experience. And you need to work on your game all the time. If you play professionally, it's not like you learn, you know, combination. that's enough. And talking about math is necessary, but it's not enough to be successful.
I see. Okay. And what, like, why do you have an interest in poker?
It's like this story started a long time ago when I was in my, in university, when I, had my first degree, when I was getting my first degree in math. A lot of my, let's say, classmates, students, they were playing. And remember, I'm from Belarus, so the quality of life, they're pretty low. I mean, I'm not talking about that we don't have streets or something like that. $200-$300 for the students. It was a big money. And in poker, it was pretty easy to make it.
Okay. I see.
I saw that my classmates do this. And why not? Why
is there like a gender divide in playing poker?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
I mean, I think only maybe, I don't know exact number, but I think less than 5% of women.
So when you were there, did you feel special or did you feel an outlier?
I felt like, now we will see who you are.
Love it. I mean, you know, the reason I dig in so much is because poker startups are like poker. Having been a startup and now doing something which involves investing around startups, you have to believe in something, which is usually the founding team and the scope of the product, right? There, that's, I feel like that's where in that stage you put your stake in the ground for that. And then it's really throw of die. So,
yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, it's like the similarity of poker in your own business, like or startup especially, it's like you already mentally prepare for up and downs, but you see your, you know, like aim and you go there very strong without, you know, compromising anything.
Okay. No, I like it. I love it. I love the attitude of, because you're already like different in that particular setup. And when you came to Chicago and you are doing this business, do you feel different in like you are, let's say, a woman in a man's world?
I felt like I'm the person new for this world. I can say that I felt some kind of underestimated because I am a woman. Sometimes maybe a little bit, but you know, if we're talking about this topic about diversity here in Chicago, we have a great help, support for women-based startups, for LGBTQ-based startups, Latina, Black, any kind of minors. There is especially one, I would say, organization, 1871, that helps a lot for especially first-time founders. They provide a lot of mentors, learning programs. They help to be in some kind of event that you can't afford or you couldn't be invited. So they're trying to open the doors for you where it would be, you know, definitely closed if you don't have connections, if you don't net networking or a lot of money or a lot of, you know, I don't know, popularity, like that, you're not famous. So yeah, I think it's very important if you're a founder or you would like to be a founder, be very consistent, be active, build your network, definitely, because without network, it's very hard to do anything. If we just, you know, we can start even just with the customer development. Yeah, when you're validating, when you have B2B startup, B2B business, you need to validate your CP. And usually business people, they will not talk with you, they will not spend with you, especially C-suite, just because you texted them some kind of message in LinkedIn. I mean, it's very hard if you would like to do everything fast and appropriate. So yeah, that's how, it's like the field where they help me, 1871, and in other networks. I'm also a member of Gilder. I also, you know, trying to be in Women in Tech network here. We have a lot of opportunities, a lot of organizations who would like to support you. And that's why I'm talking that it's very important to be active and see opportunities where you can, you know, find help or support. And it's very important also ask about help, you know, because people sometimes they're like shy or I don't know, they think that, oh, I can't ask about help because people will see that I'm weak or something. Like, no, you are not, you know, without help. It's very hard to build anything. And we are not, yeah, we are founders, we are co-founders, but in the same time, we're not people who know everything. Yes. And that's absolutely fine to ask about help. Yes. Where you're not an expert.
I agree. I mean, I'm very happy you reached out to me on LinkedIn through Gilder, because I think, you know, I also like I'm on the platform, but I'm more reactive than proactive just because of my time. So when people come and write to me, I love it because it means that you have taken the initiative for whatever connections, right? And that's, I think the startup industry is very interconnected wherever you are and whatever you do. Today, we have become so global. So chances of me very much, I remember what all my guests on my podcast do. And as I go to different places, if you're looking for money or you want clients, it's just like you make the links very quickly. So I think staying active, as you said, and oh my God, I cannot mention again and again about being consistent. I think that it's just consistency in showing up. It's consistency in scheduling things. It's as a startup, I think it's basic, but I am pretty sure you've met startup founders who just don't show up. And that's really a key to success. So I really like the advice that you've given. That's very much in line with what I believe too. Do you think that your journey of living in different countries has informed, molded your entrepreneurial journey?
Oh, for sure. Like any kind of another experience, you know, where people, where humans and every, let's say, event in your life, one way or another, makes impact in your psychology, in your mental things, in your reactions. And talking about living in another country, in another culture, in another environment, absolutely yes. It definitely, you know, sometimes I don't know if somebody tell you about this, but I think that even speaking in different languages, you have a little bit another personality. When you speak, like when I speak Belarusian or Russian, I have one attitude, and when I speak English, a little bit another. I'm not absolutely different person, but you know, kind of a little bit something special for in every language.
I completely believe that. I'm actually taking like German classes, restarting them again, and I can see how my brain has to work differently when it comes to German. And I think that the whole trick is when you get over the hump, this is my personal challenge, you have to not think in your native language, which for me right now is English, but you have to think open, that's in German, and then you make jump over the hump. So I think just talking a different language, yeah, I like that, makes you a different personality, and it's just different sides of us, right?
Yeah, and I would say, you know, we have partners who is here in Chicago. I just real example, yeah. One of the partners, the marketing agency, they are also with the web development. They're doing the SEO, but the owners, the founders, they are here, but they're Russian speaking, and we have we can discuss our business questions in one way, dun 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 dun, quicker, faster, in the point, we need to do this and that, let's do this, when, next week, fine, perfect, do it, let's do it, and we have partners who is Americans, IT consulting company. And we have we need to schedule a couple of calls before we, I'm not telling you that it's bad or good. It's just a little bit different.
It's different.
Yeah. And that's fine. And when you speak different languages, you need, you also like different cultures. Yeah. And you make businesses with people from different cultures differently. You need to be flexible. This is what I'm talking about. You know, you can't be the same person. I mean, maybe such people like Elon Musk can.
I mean, I think it's also like a good, I don't know, if we have different personalities and we can bring it out, why not?
This is what I'm talking about. That's fine. You know, you need to admit it, I'm not the same person, and that's fine. This is who you are. And my therapist say, you need to love yourself, like who you are. Like
exactly. Exactly. I am more American and Swiss than Indian. And I think I sometimes surprise people by being very non-Indian. It's just...
See? I mean, but that's amazing, I think. And it's so great to have such experience. Yeah, talking about from being from different countries and making the business in different countries. Yeah, you have something special. It's not something that, you know, bad. It's really good. The more experience, better for you.
I have a standard question now to all my guests. Are you an entrepreneur or an innovator? The definition is open-ended or both.
I think I'm an entrepreneur, and I think that my co-founder is an innovator. Why I am talking about this? I mean, it's a great question, and I think that when you have in your startup, in your company, two personalities of innovator and entrepreneur together, and you know, understand what you are doing together, you're in the same page. I can say 100%, but it's a much higher possibility that it would be successful rather than you have only one type of the, yeah.
The world needs both.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, it can give you just a small example. We are trying to organize some business event for the first time for our community here in Chicago. And we have like 6 people, organizers, but the problem is that every of this person is a leader, and we don't have the people who, you know, we're talking about the strategy, about some kind of high-end things, but okay, who will do this post? And like, no, like, I'm too busy, you know, I can't tell you what to, so yeah, we need every person. Every person can contribute what they can do. Some people would like to be leaders. Some people would like, you know, build some kind of strategy. But some people would like to do just, you know, things that necessary to be done. Because if you know, we're not in ancient Greece, that, you know, we are sitting like a lot of you know, these smart guys and just talking the and talk and talk. I mean, we need things to be done, and we need people who will do it.
And so, it's how did you resolve that problem?
Oh,
has it been resolved?
I mean, it wasn't the day one. I mean, we realize it in some time. I would be happy if somebody, you know, would tell me this a little bit earlier. But yeah, we decided to make this separation, not like separation, our responsibility very clear. I do this, he does this. Let's say he's doing the tech part plus operating part, like, you know, yeah, I have a degree in economics and accounting, but I don't enjoy it. You know, it's not what I would like to do. But for him, it's like, yeah, I can do it. It's not a problem. I don't feel bad or something like that. So that's why it's also, yeah, you know, very important to clarify responsibilities. And I was talking about this a lot of times. But yeah, it's very important for co-founders to really understand where your responsibilities, again, I'm sorry. But and after that, you don't expect, you know, that something wouldn't be done because, you know, here I am doing stuff, here he's doing stuff. And that's it. You know, of course, we meet and mix our, you know, some tasks, because you can't be, you can't work in isolation when you're co-founders. But yeah, this is how it works for us. And I hope, you know, somebody will, you know, understand my advice and take this in their mind that, yeah, it's very important, you know, to have clear responsibilities.
Yes, I think in the stages of a startup, when they're starting to go to clients, I think responsibilities are just important, because then they can put a face to a name and then react to things.
Every part of this journey, every part of this work, you know, when you're building something, is important and there is no boring job. There is people who would like to do this and that, and they enjoy this. So let them do this, you know, the part of the job that they really would like to do. And don't say it's boring, because they could enjoy it. It's some kind of, you know, I don't want to make that people feel they're miserable or something like that, because I really respect every person who somehow involved in our journey, in our company. And for me, it could be, you know, not, I wouldn't say boring. I would say for me, it would be hard to focus on this part of the work. But for them, no, they feel like, you know, they're doing something that's interesting for them. That's why, you know, it's also very important to understand what kind of role you have in the company and where you can contribute the most.
And then on that note, wrapping up, what is your outlook for Perforator in terms of the industries that you maybe want to target, or just how do you see it in the next 2 to 3 years?
Oh, it's a great question. You know, of course, I would like to build a unicorn. yeah, and I think that we, in this way, hopefully, but at least we, yeah, see the aim, see our purpose. And we would like, yeah, to change the industry. If we're talking about low tasting industry, we would like to make it, and we already made it, affordable and optimized for any type of the company, any size of the company, and especially growing companies.
Excellent. That's a great way to wrap up the podcast. I wish you good luck, you and your team good luck, in fulfilling your mission, in raising money, becoming a unicorn.
Of course, yeah, you know, maybe next time, yeah.
Yes, I would love that. Oh, that would be great. I would say I had her on my podcast.